Blog Talk Radio.
We would have you understand that the flame that you are burns eternally and shall never go out, no matter how bright you allow yourself to become. We shall have you understand that you exist now and always shall, and you always have, because now is the only time and the only place and the only existence there is and always has been and ever shall be. You are eternal. You are infinite. You are spirit. You are body. You are mind. You are heart. You are soul. You are an idea. You are an expression. You are a thought. You are a dream of the infinite creation. But that is reality, and all reality is couched within your dream. You contain it all. You are the whole expression in your own individualized way. You are the matrix. The matrix is you. You are everything. Everything comes from you. Everything gives birth to you as you reinforce the existence of everything and everyone. All that is, the infinite creation, the fabric of existence, chose you, chose that you should exist, chose you, consciously chose you. You are in that way, therefore, blessed, and we would have you understand that. Simply because of the fact that you exist, you are blessed. For you are created out of divine material, out of divine light. You are the infinite creator. And your existence was a conscious decision, a conscious thing, a conscious choice. Act in like manner. Be of like mind. Respect yourselves. Love yourselves unconditionally. For out of unconditional love were you created. And out of unconditional love shall you create anything you desire. Begin to feel the energy of your interlinking with all thought forms, all consciousness, all civilizations, all eyes, all ideas, all mind, all heart, all soul, all spirit is one. And you are one within that sea, within that pool. Know that you are the fabric and the essence of the galactic energy. Not one of you, in that sense, can be removed from the matrix without the collapse of the entire structure. You are integral in that way. You are essential in that way. And we would have you understand that because you are interconnected in this way, because everything you do has impact within the entirety of creation, that you deserve to exist in this way, and you deserve to be the fullest individual you can imagine yourself to be. That you deserve to manifest all the things you can conceive of. That you deserve the existence you have been given, or it would not have been granted to you. That you deserve all the love you can imagine, because love is what you are made out of. That you deserve all the light you can create in your life, because light is what you are made out of. Feel in the beating of your heart that it keeps pace with the rhythm and the pulse of the spinning of all the galaxies, of the fabric of existence itself, of the universal heart of infinite creation. For you all beat within that heart, and not a one of you is outside the heart of all that is. You are the blood and the life force of God itself. It is your force and your life as well. You are it, and it is you. Out of your dreams, be born. Out of your heart, be alive. Out of your soul, be light. For you are nothing else.
Revolutionary Life. This is Gary,
I'm your host tonight, Revolutionary Life. I want to thank everybody for tuning in, who's tuning in. And Revolutionary Life is right here on Blog Talk Radio every weekday night from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Every weekday night. Again, I'm your host, Gary. For anybody who's new listening in, Revolutionary Life, this show is a call-in show. There's a certain point, however, in the show when I will announce that call-in section of the show, right? So be listening for that if you want to call in. I'll be giving out that number. In fact, that number should be on my site there. But I'll give it out just the same. And I'll have my chat room open for questions and comments and the like. I call it your time to shine. So I set a whole part of this show aside for questions and comments. But first, guys, I want to present the topic of this show to you. And the topic today here at Revolutionary Life is there a war against women? Let me say that again. The topic of our show, guys, is there actually a war out there in this society and others against women? Women. Is there? Tonight, we're going to take a revolutionary look. If you're new here, you have to understand that here on this station, we deal with issues that affect our lives every day, directly and indirectly, our society, etc. But we look at those issues from a revolutionary point of view. We look at those issues from a revolutionary point of view. And revolution is just change. And there's a hell of a lot of things out here need to be changed. But before we do that, we need clarity. And so we try to keep our fingers on the pulse of change around here. And right now, today, we're dealing with an issue that affects our lives every day, all day. And we ask the question tonight, is there a war out there against women? Let's see. Let's talk about that tonight. Hang in there, guys, because we're going to get deep. Oh, yeah, it's deep. You better believe it. And we also archive all our shows, guys. I want to give you that heads up as well. If you're looking at my site and you scroll down, you're going to see an on-demand section. So everything is archived, meaning you can go back to that on-demand section and look at shows of the past. This show, about an hour after we're done, will be in that on-demand section. So if you can't stay for the whole show, that kind of thing, don't worry about it. You can always put it up on demand. And you can always comment on those older sessions, and I'll get those comments. No problem. All right. So let's get to it. Let's cap this off here. Is there a war against women out there in our society? Now, you guys know, and everybody pretty much have heard of our abuses against women and that kind of thing, that women's shelters out there, specifically shelters out there for women who are trying to escape abuse in their homes and that kind of thing. So we do know that exists, but it's a little bit deeper than that. I'm going to take you back, guys. I'm going to take you back to an ideology, a social situation that may explain where we are today when it comes to the women or the females in our, in me and your lives and in society in general. I want you to think about that woman. I want you to think about her history in this society. I want to think about where she at today, progress or lack thereof, whatever. And when I come back, guys, we're going to open up this can of worms because it needs to be addressed from a revolutionary point of view. I'm going to give you a little music. I'll be right back. Revolutionary Life. This is Gary. I'm your host tonight. And tonight, we have a subject tonight, a topic tonight that asks the question, is there a war against women in our society and other societies around the world. Let me address this question this way, guys. And the reason I'm pulling this together tonight is that I have to start with experience, right? I was raised in a community. And when I say a community, I'm just simply referring to my family, my neighbors, the people we went to church with, the people we saw every day in the streets and neighborhoods and around the neighborhood, everything. And I will speak to what was acceptable, what was the norm in my community, what was all right, which would pass for a normal, and as it related to women, in my community, in my upbringing, in my culture, it seems, you could say. So as a young man, looking at adults, you know, when young people grow up, they're always looking up at their big brothers and their parents and seeing what they're doing and trying to do what they do. You know what I mean? Because you want to grow up too. You want to be a grown up too and have grown up stuff and do grown up things. So you're always watching grown ups as you come up as a kid and trying to mimic them so you look grown. So you could get where you have these privileges, it seems, that grown-ups have, that kind of thing. You know how it is when you're coming up as a kid. So you're watching everything that goes down. Violence towards women in my community, in my society, in my little culture, neighborhood, churches, church group, school, that whole thing, right? Certain things were acceptable. Violence. Not just wanton violence, but violence, just the same, was acceptable. I grew up hearing about women in my family before I was born, my great-grandfolks or whatever, who had abusive husbands. I didn't like that idea as a kid. You know, somebody beating my mom. But it was a husband. And so they lived with these abusive men. The community did not ostracize these men for beating their wives' butt, for slapping their wives down, beating them down, or whatever. Right? It was not prohibited. It was not a bad thing. Nobody wanted to see it. Maybe people didn't like it, but it was acceptable. In fact, guys, there were words in my community. There were phrases in my community. There was admonishments in my community like this, that goes like this. Since I respect this man, his woman, his wife, or his girlfriend, or whatever, maybe she entered a conversation I was in. Maybe she said something to me that if a man had said, I would have slapped his face. Me and him would have had words. But a woman said it. Now, she was somebody's. Get used to that, guys, that possessive term. Because that was normal also. She was somebody's woman. And so in respect to that man, that she, quote, belonged to, you know, somebody's, apostrophe S is a possessive term, isn't it? So in response, in response to her getting up in my face, and in respect for her man, I don't say anything to her. I go to her husband or her boyfriend or her man, and I say, hey, brother, because me and him cool. We always been cool. But she just said something to me that I wouldn't allow the man to say to me and get away with. So, but I'm not going to deal with her. I'm going to go to her man and I'm going to say, hey, brother, your woman out of line. Hey, brother, you need to put your woman in her place. Hey, brother, your woman's getting out of pocket. Your woman's out of place. You need to straighten her out. So in respect to the man, I wouldn't touch the woman for what she did. In respect for the man, I'd go to him and I'd say, look, man, your woman is getting out of hand over here. And it's your job, and that's literally what I'm saying to him, but I wouldn't use them terms. It's your job. But I'm just saying, I would go over and say, hey, brother, your woman out of pocket, man. You got to put your woman back in her place, man. You got to straighten her out, man. And so it'd be his job to go over to her and say, hey, baby, cool down a minute. All right, have a seat over here. Or whatever. Whatever his job was. His job was to go straighten her out. And I mean straighten her out. Right? Because she out of place. She out of pocket. So she had a place, didn't she? She must have to be out of it. She had a role, she has a spot, she has a place, and she could step out of that place, obviously. Because when I go over to a man, I'm going to tell her, you need to put your woman back in her place. That was normal where I came from. I don't know where you came from. I don't know what society you were raised in, so I can't speak to that. I have to speak to what I know. The place I grew up, the people I grew up around, my older brothers, my father and grandfathers, and their relationship with the women in their lives. It wasn't uncommon to hear that somebody beat their wife. Maybe she came in late. Maybe he was a jealous guy. And he thought she was seeing somebody or something like that. Maybe, I don't want to go into a whole lot of stories, man, but I got stories, man. I got stories. All right. Now, let me tell you one. To get this rolling, let me just tell you a story. It ain't funny, but it's... And I'm going to get to why it is. And this is going to get a little deep, guys. But a minister had a wife and a bunch of kids. And he was a minister. And so when he went to church to preach on Sunday, his family would come in and they'd have that front row seat. His wife and the kids would come in. Now, early one morning, one Sunday morning, before church, another minister knocked on the door of this minister's home, a friend of his, and came in to discuss things with him before church that morning. So these two ministers were sitting down discussing things, all right? The woman of the house, the wife of the one minister who lived there, asked if you walked up to them and asked them would they like coffee. Since they were having this discussion, she wanted to serve them. And there was a guest there, so she wanted to serve coffee. So she asked them would they like coffee. And sure, they both said yeah. So sure enough, she went and made coffee for them. Now, when the conversation was over between the two ministers, the minister who were visiting the house left. And as the husband shut the door behind the minister who had come to visit, he turned around and hit his wife, knocked her down to the ground, this preacher. Put a knot on her head, Jack. And he said, how did you know how that nigger liked his coffee? I'm quoting, guys. Forgive me. How did you know how that guy liked his coffee? Obviously, she had fixed coffee for the guest just the way he likes it, I guess. I don't know. But when that visiting pastor left this pastor's home, he turned around and knocked his wife to the ground and said, how do you know how he liked this coffee? And that was okay in my community, even in the religious community, obviously. This was a preacher. And he went on to church that morning and left his family at home that morning because she grew a knot on her face. A big bump came on her face. Her eye was blackened. So he didn't want her showing up in church looking like that. Now, of course, the way the story goes is as soon as this preacher went to church to do his preaching, the mother got all the kids together, got them dressed for church, and she walked into the church with sunglasses on. And when she took them off, you could hear people taking deep breaths as they looked at her face. Horrible looking knot on her head. So they tell me that the preacher got some counseling or something, but nobody blamed him. He went on preaching. In my community, where I was raised, that was acceptable. The older guys would have to explain to the younger guys that they needed to dominate their women, put them in their place, keep them in their place. And the community, and you might not be able to relate to this, you might have come from some totally different community, I don't know. But where I came from, disciplining your woman was part of the deal of being married to one. It seemed. I found myself as a young teenager fighting grown men. And I'll tell you that story, just it's not that long, it's just short. I was babysitting for my sister. I used to make little money babysitting for my big sisters. They were all older than me, you know, my sisters and brothers. And so one day she came in with her boyfriend after I was babysitting for them. I was there. And they were arguing. And I saw this man hit my sister. I mean, he hit her like he was fighting another grown man. And I lost it. That was my sister, right? I lost it, man. I was all over this dude. I was trying to take him out. Now, he's older than I was. But the emotion that I had allowed me to overpower him. I'll end that story by telling you she went back with this guy. He abused her again. Me and my older brother addressed him again, dressed him down, and she went back with him again. I threw my hands up. Why are you back with this guy again? And so, in my community, there wasn't necessarily a war against women, but women had a place And if they got out of their place, you, if you were wearing, quote unquote, wearing the pants in the house, that's what the saying in my community. Who wears the pants in your house? Was a saying common in where I came up. Now, I don't know if I came up on the moon, if you guys, if nobody out there can relate. But if you can, if you can't, then you're getting an education today. That there's a community among you in this country where young kids are raised watching this go down, learning this, to tell the truth. And so you can expect that when these kids grow up and get married, or have a girlfriend or a woman or something in their lives, they're going to be expected to discipline her. They're going to be expected to keep her in her place. It wasn't uncommon in my community to hear somebody make a joke like, you need to keep that woman barefoot and pregnant. You never heard that before if you're ingenue. If you don't know anything about my community, if you're a novice at this marriage relationship thing, I'm waking you up. To those of y'all who know what I'm talking about, y'all been there, done that, and got the dirty t-shirt. Keep her barefoot and pregnant. That'll keep her out of trouble. That'll keep her at home. No man is going to go after a woman that's got a bunch of children running up behind her. A pregnant woman, or a woman that's raggedy, she's got poor clothing and don't look so good. Keep her at home, barefoot and pregnant. Y'all ain't never heard that before. I take it. I don't know. But it was normal in our community. Among the people I lived with. Among the people I live next door to, among the people I went to school with, among the people I went to church with, it wasn't uncommon for a woman to go to church, a pastor, and the pastor's wife, and the pastor sits her down and tell her to go back into that house, that abusive relationship. She went to them for help. He's coming in drunk. He's beating me and scaring the kid, da-da-da-da-da. It wasn't uncommon for the preacher and his wife to sit down with her and explain to her that she needs to go back in that house and make it work. What does make it work mean? I'll let you figure that out. So there are shelters for women. Some of them were sent back in those houses, and they are graves for those women. Yeah. They are graves for those women when they were sent back to work it out. However, some women get out of there, and I praise them for doing so. Because any situation, you only have three choices. You accept it, you change it, or you leave it. All else is madness. All else is madness. Where did all of this start? Where did my parents get it from? Where did their parents get it from? We're going to talk about that when I get back. I'm going to give you a little. You're listening to Revolutionary Life. This is Gary. I'm your host tonight. And tonight I ask you a question. Is there war? Is there a war out here against women? That ain't just a yes or no question, guys. Tell the truth. That's why we had to do a show on this subject. I want to take you back, guys. Hang in there. I'm going to take you back 100 years, and I'm going to ask you this question again. 1865, country passed a law against slavery, the enslavement of other human beings for fun and profit. And we'll get into that one day. But slaves, people who had been enslaved for generations, hundreds of years, generation after generation after generation after generation, centuries, were now free from slavery. Slavery was illegal in most states in the United States. Not 10 years after that, 1870s, all the way up to the 1890s, those freed men and women who were freed from being enslaved, those men who were freed from being enslaved went through a period that's known in my history books, they taught us in school, called Reconstruction. During that period, Mississippi, a slave state, had a, no longer a slave state now, had a lieutenant governor that was a black man, an ex-slave. Ex-slaves were voting and taking off and taking offices officially. In the late 1800s, ex-slaves, people who were property 10 years ago, people who were owned and sold and bought like they were chattel 10 years ago, in hundreds of years, now they were freed. And once they were freed, they could vote. And we had a black lieutenant governor in 1889 in Mississippi. Of course, the governor was a military general because that's the way things work. When the South lost the war, a military general was set up as the governor in those states that had been defeated, and a lieutenant governor was elected. A black man was elected lieutenant governor in Mississippi. Guys, it wasn't until the 1900s, the early 1900s, that women, white women, got the right to vote. You've heard of the suffrage movement? That didn't happen in the 1800s. The suffrage movement happened in the 1900s. A black slave, ex-slave, enslaved man, once property, once chained and chattled and bought and sold, could now vote and hold office. And a white woman couldn't. She was white. In a racist society. But a black man could vote before a white woman could. Is there a war against women? I just want to ask you that question. I want to take you back because we need the source, don't we? Where does this come from? Why was women held back, black or white? And men, even ex-slave men, could vote. and a white woman had to march and protest in the 1900s to get the right to vote. What's really going on? Thing with women. Now, if I take you back, guys, another 100 years, 1700s, let's say. If I start taking you back, we'll start getting to some of the root of this situation and some of the societies that we will examine were all patrilineal societies, male-run societies. There were still, in my time, as well as back then, certain jobs that women couldn't have that you didn't expect to see a woman have. I mean, when I was a kid, if I saw a woman driving a big wheel, tractor trailer, truck driver, it was strange. If I saw a woman climbing an electric pole to fix electric wires for a utility company, and we'd say, wait a minute, is that a woman? It was strange. Why was it strange? We got to go back. Let's go back 100 years. In an agricultural society, and when I was a kid, they had, in the cities, they had Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. But in an agricultural society, you might notice that they have something called a 4-H club. A 4-H club. They had a little symbol of a clover, a four-leaf clover. And it was called a 4-H club. And this was in the rural communities, agricultural communities. And you could go to these 4-H clubs, would have these big contests of who could grow the biggest pig or the best-looking cow or whatever. And they would win prizes, best in breed, that kind of thing. Because you were able to show your skills in agriculture by bringing in the biggest pumpkin or the biggest, you know, you were able to show your agricultural skills. And one of those agricultural skills was your ability to domesticate animals, farm animals. This domestication of farm animals was a science that was taught in agricultural communities. Still is, probably. This science has a name, guys. Look it up. It's called animal husbandry. I'm going to say that again. This domestication of animals on the agricultural communities was part of a science. It was a way to domesticate an animal. And it was called animal husbandry. You got that right. Animal, H-U-S-B-A-N-D-R-Y. Animal husbandry was all about how to take wild animals and domesticate them. Now, I don't know if anybody ever heard of a bronco buster. A bronco buster. A bronco was a wild horse. In the cowboy days, a bronco was a wild horse, and certain cowboys got the job, the dangerous job of breaking that wild horse, breaking its spirit, its wild spirit, and domesticating it and making it docile, making it obey the man on its back. So the bronco buster would mount this wild horse, jump on this wild horse back, and sure enough, since a horse was never raised for anybody to ride his back to the rest of his life, he would throw this man off of him. He would buck this man clean off of him. Well, the job of the bronco buster was to climb back on that horse, and he may get thrown off again. Now, if he didn't break an arm or break a leg, he would finally, before the day was out, break this horse. This horse would decide, I can't keep this guy off my back. What does he want? Maybe if I give him what he wants, he'll stay off of me. I don't know. But after a while, the horse gives up. And the domestication process begins after you've broken that horse. They call it breaking a horse in, or breaking that horse, or breaking its spirit. This was a part of animal husbandry. The Bronco Buster, riding these wild horses until they're broken and getting thrown off over and over again, led to something you may have heard of called the rodeo. If you've ever been to a rodeo, the concept of a rodeo came from the Bronco Buster's job. Get on a wild horse who does not want you on his back and ride him just the same and stay on him as long as you can before you're thrown off. That was a job. They turned it into a sport called the rodeo. That's where the rodeo came from, breaking animals. Animal husbandry shows you how to domesticate wild animals. Why am I telling you that story? Because husbandry did not just apply to wild animals. This practice was brought into people's homes. The female, the woman in that house, the wife and the husband of a home. The husband's job was to take this young woman who'd never been in a husband's house before and domesticate her. And the violence in the house was necessary. It was understood. Because she had to be broken. Animal husbandry. And so the violence was normal. You know she was going to buck the trend. And so you had to keep her barefoot and pregnant and in the house and et cetera, et cetera. And so you had to domesticate her. It got to the point where women would describe their occupation as domestics or housewives. Yeah, that's right. Because there were certain jobs they couldn't get. It was considered a man's job. A man would say, you stay home and take care of the kids. That's your job. And you build a nice home to raise my kids in. I'll go out and be the breadwinner and make the money. And to pay for all the bills. But I don't want you working. I don't want you having a private bank account. I don't want you getting money or support anywhere. I'll take you and move you away from your parents and your community so that that doesn't happen. So you have no other support except me, your husband. That way what I say goes. I know women today who live their life like that. And they have college degrees, but they never use that degree. In fact, their husband died, and they didn't know how to write a check because he handled all of that. She stayed home and had children and raised the kids. And in my community, that's the way it's supposed to work. That was normal. Animal husbandry. Let me take you back. Let's go back another 100 years. Another 100 years, a king who wanted to join with another king to make a bigger army to protect himself. The two kings says, let's our families unite. And to seal the deal, you can have my daughter. Marry your son. The son and the daughter, particularly, had little to say about that. if two kingdoms wanted to come together, we could seal the deal by me grabbing one of my daughters and sending them over to marry one of your sons. And she'd have little to say about that. Talk about runaway brides. There used to be runaway brides for real. Because this young woman didn't want to marry some old guy because he was king. And the daddy and the family wanted to hook up with this other kingdom. And they were going to use her to seal the deal. And she would take off. You don't believe me? That's where the runaway bride comes from. But you don't believe me, do you? There is a thing in a wedding that's to this day that you call a wedding ring. A wedding ring. And you put it on her finger in front of your preacher and friends and relatives. And y'all take y'all vows. It's a wedding ring. She gets one, you get one. It didn't used to be called a wedding ring. It used to be called a wedding band. It didn't have diamonds and jewels or none of that on it. It was called a wedding band. Why was it called a wedding band instead of just a wedding ring? A nice little wedding ring, diamond ring or something. Because a band is what you used to do. You used to tie a rope or a band around the girl's wrist. And you attached that band to your wrist. And you drug her ass before a preacher. So she could not run away. The wedding band, or what y'all call a wedding ring, a cute little wedding ring. The history of that ring was handcuffs. They didn't call them handcuffs, but effectively that's what it was. Because women didn't have a choice on who to marry, and sometimes they would run away. The runaway bride was a real thing. So why did the woman choose who she wanted to marry? There are arranged marriages in some countries today. The family decided you're going to marry this person. End of story. Child brides in some places are common today. Where once a girl reaches puberty, you can sell her. Oh, I'm sorry. They called it a dowry or a chest. It had a nice name to it. But in other words, if you had a couple of sheep and that family needed some sheep, you could use sheep and trade for their daughter. Y'all don't hear me. Where does this come from? How does she get so powerless? Let me take you back another 100 years. Around certain countries, there's a book out, guys, and I'm going to wrap this up. There's a book out, and you can get the book. It's called the Aryan, you know, like the white Aryans. And the yellow Aryans, the Japanese used to call themselves when they were running with Hitler, the white Aryan, Aryan Brotherhood, the Aryan, right? There's a book called The Aryan Invasion of the Indus Valley, the Indus Valley being that area around India, what's now called India. The Aryan from the north, the Norseman, came down, killing, raping, and taking. You guys seen the Vikings, the movie Vikings and all that. They came down killing, raping, and taking. They were called Vandals. They were called Vandals. There's a whole country dedicated to pleasing these Vikings, these vicious Vikings. There's a whole country that is just called Normandy, N-O-R-M-A-N-D-Y. Normandy was put together for the Norse man, to calm his ass down because he was a barbarian, not a Bavarian. Barbarian. A barbarian with a V is no different than a barbarian with the B. Don't get it twisted. They were called barbarians because of the wanton killing and murder they did. Coming down from the north. And when they reached the Indus Valley, they found as far south as they came south, they ran into communities that were matrilineal. It blew their minds. You mean tell me a woman is in charge here in India or in these Indus Valley villages and cities? You mean there's women in charge in Africa? Women are running shit? Well, a woman can't beat me in battle, and my king has to be able to fight and beat people. In fact, there was a little movie that a lot of people watched called Wakanda, Black Panther, where the young man to take over to become the king, he literally had to have a fight, a fist fight that could have ended his life. And if he won that fight, he got the crown. Fighting each other, men fighting each other for the crown, for to be able to run shit, was normal. Normalized, especially for the Norsemen. Might meant right. And since a woman could not beat me in battle, there's no way in the hell she's running shit. But when they got down to the Indus Valley, as far south as they would come, they would find these societies that were matrilineal. And the basics of matrilineal societies was nature. It was almost natural. You could look at nature and see the lioness. You could look at nature and see the elephant. You know, and when you're training elephants, you separate the female. The female literally leads the pack. Among lions, among elephants, in the wild, they remove the woman. Among elephants, she's called the heifer. The heifer. You remove the heifer from the rest of the crowd. And you herd the rest of them out. And you put them where you want them to be. And then you bring the heifer out. Because if you bring the heifer out first, wherever she goes, that's where the entire herd is going to go. And you don't want her leading out the herd somewhere different than you want the herd to go. So you hide the heifer until you get the rest of them in a corral somewhere or some area that you want them to stay in. And then you bring the heifer out, and she'll go over there where they are. But if you bring the heifer out first, she will control the whole scene. And you'll be running in behind her, trying to get her to get the rest of those elephants to follow them over to this other place. So you hold the heifer back. Same thing with cows. There's heifers in the herd, and they run and shit. Now, heifer, guys, and you may have heard a woman called a heifer in some societies. In my community, I've heard it. And it's a Latin term. In Mexico, or in Latin countries, Spanish, a jefe, el jefe, the jefe, H-E-F-E, the jefe is the boss. If you hear someone who speaks Latin speak about the jefe, they're talking about the boss, the guy running shit. And so the jefe in society, in Latin society, was the boss of the job, on the job, or the, you know, or the landowner, or whoever was running shit. He was the jefe, el jefe, the big guy, the big man, man in charge. In the animal kingdom, among the herd, she was referred to as a heifer for that very same reason. Anyway, this matrilineal society has evolved along with nature naturally. The Norseman, the Aryan invasion of the Indus Valley turned that around. They established something, a religion, and it's a social arrangement as well, called Brahmanism. Now, if you read your history books, guys, Brahmanism occurred in India around the time the Aryans hit town. And Brahmanism was the first time we hear about a caste system, where there were some people who were considered lower castes, and there were some people considered higher castes. Now, I'll get into that another time when I deal with race, because when you look at the caste system in India, it's the darker people who are called the untouchables, lower class. And it's the lighter-skinned, Aryan-looking Indians who are called the Brahmin, the upper class. Where in the Brahmin society, a woman couldn't run shit. The Aryans changed everything. Indian gods, female goddesses, the Aryans said, oh no, there are no female gods. They actually changed female gods into male gods. Brahmanism was established. And it was the first time a matrilineal society saw itself flipped on its head. And men, as opposed to what goes on in nature, men were running shit. Now, all right. I'm trying to stick with the time frame here, guys. But women, by nature, evolved naturally to be in possession of land, Mother Earth. In many of these matrilineal societies, you could not own land. You could not use land. You could not set up a piece in a piece of land without a woman's approval, because land was the purview of the female, Mother Nature, land. The Aryans couldn't have this. The Brahmin religion put an end to women owning property or being in control of land. Ever since ancient Egypt, and here in this country, man, the Native Americans, same thing. But even in ancient Egypt, even if you were a pharaoh, your possession and control over land, ground, tierra, had to come through a woman. Even if it was a mock marriage with your sister, if you didn't have a hookup through a royal woman, you couldn't take possession of Upper and Lower Nile. You couldn't take possession of land, pharaoh or no pharaoh. Same thing with the Native Americans here in this country, the early Native Americans. That all changed. That's where it started, guys. It started to flip. The Brahmin religion became the Abrahamic religions. In most of the Abrahamic religions, they are referred to as Judeo-Christian religions. And most of the Judeo-Christian religions who have that patriarch, Abraham. And when I say Judeo-Christian, I mean Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And those religions, to this day, women maintain a lower level of position in those societies. And in those religions themselves, actually, there were no women imams among the Arabs, unheard of. There were no women messengers from God, unheard of. There were no women popes, there weren't supposed to be, women popes, unheard of. Or women priests, unheard of. All Judeo-Christian religions have rules for women that leak into society, where those same, where there are also rules. Women have a place. Hey, man, your woman getting out of place. You got to put your woman back in her place. You hear me? You remember that? Women had a place, and it was never in control of anything, not even a household, because they would ask you, man, who wears the pants in this family? If it looked like the woman had some say in the house, your buddies, your friends, and neighbors would say, who really wears the pants in that house? You know what they mean. I don't have to tell you what that meant. But it goes way back to the way back. The Catholic Church said the worst job they had was to stop these pagans from worshiping women. The Catholic Church said we wanted them to concentrate on Jesus the Christ, but they keep looking at Mother Mary. What are we going to do? The ancient concept of a goddess had to be gotten rid of. There were to be no more goddesses. You could have a father, you could have a son, but you could not have a wife or a goddess. You could have a god, but you couldn't have a goddess. That had to be erased. She couldn't hold positions in a Jewish synagogue. She couldn't hold positions in a Muslim mosque. As a matter of fact, if you go to a Muslim mosque, the men pray separate from the women. Not to mention their faces are covered and they can't drive and some of them can't even go to school. So things are more progressive in some of these places, but there's still all these rules. Some man. And oftentimes they got their church doctrines to back them up. So it's not just arbitrary. Some man sets a set of rules for where a woman's job is. And she's not supposed to step out of those jobs. Those positions. See, out of place. You got to put your woman back in a place, man. So you know what I mean? So this started, this goes way back to the way back. And so you had this religion coming along called Brahman. And you had this Judeo-Christian set of religions that came along who had the same patriarch, a Brahman, Abraham, you call him, Ibrahim. The house of Brahman, and they all have a very similar position on women. Even if you're a nun in a nunnery, an abbey, there has to be a male bishop or priest overseeing your abbey. You can't run it yourself because you're a woman. And so, it's not your fault that women are having a hard time in this society today. It's not your fault that there's battered women centers. It's not your fault that there's a Me Too movement. You were told and sold on the denigration of women since you were a child. And before you were a child. When you open up your holy book, one of those holy books says that Adam was in a state of grace. The snake, the evil snake in the Garden of Eden didn't go to Adam to try to fool him into eating the forbidden fruit. He went to the woman. Why? Because she was supposed to be weak and easy to be beguiled and fooled. But Adam was still in a state of grace, even after Eve ate the apple. So then she had to convince him to eat some too. So the man failed because of a woman. Now, you go read your own Bible. But the one in my house, every page I turned, there was a Jezebel. Every page I turned, there was a woman cutting off Samson's locks. Everywhere I turned, there was a woman who danced with King David and when King David said you could have whatever you want, she said, I want John Baptist, John the Baptist's head on a platter, and she got it. Saul told his wife not to look back, but she was so into all that homosexuality and shit that was going on in Sodom and Gomorrah that she looked back anyway and turned to a pillar of salt. I don't know about your holy books, but they don't raise her very high in those books. In fact, she's treacherous in some of them. It ain't your fault, told and sold. You've been made to believe. You've been made to understand, like I was when I was a kid, that it was okay, that a woman had a place and it wasn't around men anyway. There were certain jobs she wasn't supposed to have. You were supposed to be the breadwinner and she's supposed to stay at home barefoot and pregnant. And if she stepped out of any of those lines, you had all kinds of names for her, a loose woman. A wild woman needing to be broken, like when you domesticate a horse, you break his spirit. How do you break his spirit? You ride him until he gives up. The rodeo, remember? Bronco Busters. You had to break her in and break her down. And take away the spirit and make her domesticated, subservient. What you say goes. And that's how we know who wear the pants in the house. Because what you say goes as a man. That's how you prove to your friends and neighbors you wear the pants in the house. You may beat her down in front of them so they know who wear the pants in the house, but it ain't your fault. I was raised that way. It was acceptable in my community. The people I went to school with, the people I went to church with, the people I lived next door to. Is there a war against women? Why come a male black slave who used to be property, who used to not even be considered human, could vote before a white woman? You've heard of the suffrage movement. The 1900s, before a white woman had the right to vote. Shit, she was white in a white-dominated society, and she couldn't vote. It wasn't because of her color, it was because of her gender. But it ain't your fault. You've been told and sold. I'm moving into my call-in section. I didn't want to take up too much time. That's an esoteric reason, but we don't have time to get there. There's an esoteric domination of the female going on among the spiritual community. That's been going on for a while, and there's some interesting things about that esoteric nature of the female. And it has nothing to do with a woman. It really has nothing to do with the female. It has something to do with femininity and the feminine energy. There's something about that energy to be corralled. And efforts have been made, even among the spiritual, esoteric communities, to sideline or to corral that, capture that energy and use it for male purposes, for masculine purposes. I remember when women started getting good jobs, men-type jobs. I remember when they used to wear suits and ties like a man. Because if you live in a patrilineal society, if the only way up is to mimic men, if you could drink a man under the table, if you could curse as hard as a man could curse, all those things were kind of positives. If you were coming up in a male-dominated society, you had to be able to do those male things. And so a lot of masculinity had to
exude from you to be accepted among men.
I'm moving into my call-in session, guys. I got to pick this up another time, but I'm going to get to the esoteric. I'm going to tell you about the circle versus the angle, the femininity, and the divine feminine. But can't do that tonight. I set this side of the show for you. I call it your time to shine. Our call-in section, guys, my phone number is area code 319-527-6060. 319-527-6060. My chat room is now open. So if you got any questions, any comments, hysterical outbursts, it doesn't matter. If you put it in the chat, I'm going to respond. If you call me, I'm putting you right on the air. Everybody would hear what you have to say. Everybody would hear my response. This part of the show is call-in show. Call-in part, guys. I call it your time to shine. Let me give you a little music.
Thank you.
You're listening to Revolutionary Life. Revolutionary Life is right here on Blog Talk Radio every weekday night. We're here every weekday night, Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. I'm your host, Gary. And tonight, we've been talking about that woman. And I asked you if there's a war on her. And I've taken you back. Way back in the time, to say what happened to the goddess. There used to be such a thing. You could talk about gods, nobody would blink an eye. But you mention goddess these days? A goddess? Really? No, let's talk about God up in heaven. You will say God, he wants this, and God, he said that. You've assigned him agenda. God agenda. Why you do that? Since God made men and women, why would you assign him agenda or her agenda? If I told you God was a woman, you freak out. But if I say God, he, that's okay. Where I come from, I don't know about where you came from, but that's normal. To say God, he did this and he did that. Quite normal. Let me tell you something. The Catholic Church looked down on people who studied religions, even sciences, that were not sanctioned by the church. Isaac Newton, all these early scientists, Sir Arthur Boyle, who invented the vacuum, Galileo Galilei, who declared that the sun was in the center of our solar system, that we lived in a solar system, while the church was saying, no, the earth is in the middle and everything goes around the earth. He got kidnapped and held captive in the Vatican for saying that. So science was bumping heads with religion all the time. But if you went back and studied ancient religion, guys, like I took y'all back to the Indus Valley and south of the equator into Africa, and you found these matrilineal societies in history, you had to go way back. So if you want to study about the goddess, the time of the matrilineal society, you had to do it undercover. You couldn't let the church know you were doing it. You don't hear me, do you? Well, hear this. In Paris, France, there was a group that met called the Cult of Isis. Men entered a temple in Paris, France, in the 1700s, where they worshiped a woman, Isis. The Catholic Church found out about it, and they destroyed it, burned it to the ground. And guess what? They built a cathedral in Paris on top of the Cult of Isis, and they called it Notre Dame. And they call that church, that cathedral, that Catholic church, Notre Dame. Do you know that in the Latin, Damas means women, woman? There's an important woman, a woman of note, underneath the Catholic Church cathedral in Paris, France. The cathedral was named notable. The cathedral was named Notre Dame. Madame. Dame. Dames. Damas. All means women in the Latin. They know what's underneath that church. Place where men used to go and worship a woman. It was called the Cult of Isis. This was 1700s, guys. This wasn't way back in the way back. This was in Voltaire's time and King Louis's time and Napoleon's time. Men would sneak into this temple to worship this woman, Isis, they called her. When the church found out about it, they burned it to the ground. They put a cathedral on top of it that's there today. And that cathedral was named Notre Dame, the Cathedral of Notre Dame. You can go see the cathedral. You won't see the Cult of Isis. But you can go see the cathedral today. Just remember, underneath, there was a goddess being worshipped. I asked you if there was a war against women. No. The war against femininity, and that just don't include women. The war is against the feminine. And I told you, I'm going to do another presentation on the esoteric, the metaphysical, the occult, the secret societies, and what that means for the woman in those arenas. And you tell me if there's a war against her. Not necessarily the woman, not necessarily the body, the female, gender, femininity itself, the divine feminine itself. A compass is a tool you use to draw a circle. In the esoteric world, curves and circles are representative of femininity. A square rule is something you use to draw a square. Angles were represented in the esoteric community as masculine. The compass makes a circle. The square rule square. And when I do my next presentation, I'm going to tell you why some secret societies are bent on squaring the circle, encasing the circle. I'm going to tell you why the Platonic solid stopped at the dodecahedron, because if you kept going with all those angles and different shapes, if you kept going any farther than that, you might end up with a circle, and they could not have that. A sphere, that is. But we'll get there, guys. We'll get there. Right now, we're in our call-in section. I call it your time to shine. My phone number is area code 319-527-6060. My chat room is open. Questions, comments, put them in the chat. I'll deal with that. Promise you. It's your time to shine. Let me give you a little music. You're listening to Revolutionary Life, where we deal with subjects that affect our lives every day, directly and indirectly. Difference is, we deal with them from a revolutionary point of view. And revolution is just change, people. That's one thing that's constant, they say, and that's change. Things are changing. The revolutionary wants to be on the vanguard of change. You know, if you're on the front of change, when it goes down, you might have something to say with what it looks like when it lands. If you're on the ass end of change, you might not have shit to say about it. We try to keep our fingers on the pulse around here. And tonight, I asked you if there was a war on women. Tonight, I told you that a black man who a year ago was a slave, who wasn't even considered three-fifths of a person at most for legal reasons, who was property, had the right to vote before a white woman. Explain that one. The suffrage movement went down in the 1900s when women had to protest and march for the right to vote. When a black man in the 1800s, freed from slavery, could be lieutenant governor of Mississippi, a white woman couldn't even vote, let alone be a governor. Y'all don't hear me. It goes way back and way back. I told you about the Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris, France. I told you that it sits on the top of a cult of Isis where men went to worship women until the church found out about it. Burned it down, put a cathedral on top of it. If you ever seen the movie, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, ever heard of that? There's a movie, old movie, called The Hunchback of Notre Dame. The Hunchback's faith was to be persecuted and burned at the stake by the church. Even though he worked for the church, he was a bell ringer. He had a hump in his back, a hunchback. And he would go up into the belfry, the bell tower, and ring the church bells. That was his job. The problem was, guys, if you watch this movie, and maybe you missed it, the reason the church burned him is they found out that up there in that bell tower, he had some idols up there, some little dolls. He was worshiping a religion other than Christianity, a Catholicism. He had candles and a little altar up there, and they found it. He was worshiping a pagan religion. At a time when there was a such thing as a goddess. They caught him up there in the bell tower and they found his altar and they burned him. The church burned him at the stake. Y'all didn't hear me. There ain't a war against women. There's a war against the feminine. She was once considered divine. But as we went back in history, you saw that it all changed. Now in some countries, she can't even go to school. She can't drive. She must be covered. She can't run nothing. And if she get out of hand, somebody will say, man, you better put your woman in a place. She getting out of place. She has a place. I told you about animal husbandry, the process of domesticating wild things for the farm. And I told you that husbandry moved into the home of those who practice animal husbandry. And that wild thing that had to be domesticated was the female, the woman. And the Bronco Buster was in charge of breaking her spirit, breaking the horse's spirit. The Bronco was a wild horse, and he would climb on the horse and get thrown off. And that's how we got the rodeo. Y'all heard of a rodeo? Where do you think that came from? Breaking wild things. Animal husbandry. What happened? I had to take you back a little bit further to explain how it got that way. We went all the way back to the Aryan invasion of the Indus Valley, where the Norsemen ran into all these female-run, these matrilineal societies, and they couldn't understand how it could be possible. I told you about Brahmanism, and I told you about Abrahamic religions, Judeo-Christian religions, and the woman's place in those religions. You got told and sold. The Catholic Church said the hardest job it had to do was to keep these pagans from worshiping women. Even when they became Catholics, they were more likely to have the Mother Mary's picture up in their home than Jesus. Jesus Cristo, Jesus of Nazareth, the one they call the Christ. They had to shut down on these things. I'm going to do a whole nother thing on the esoteric nature of the divine feminine. My lines are still open. I got a little bit more time, guys. Not a lot, but it's your time to shine. My chat room is open as well.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Revolutionary Life, and I'm your host here, Gary. Tonight we've been talking about the woman. Was there a war on the woman? I said, no, it's not, but it's a war on femininity. And I told you, I got a presentation coming up. I just didn't have enough time for this. But I got a presentation coming up. I'm going to take you to the esoteric side of femininity, masculinity. I'm going to talk to you about secret societies. I'm going to talk to you about their efforts to square the circle. I'm going to tell you why the dodecahedron is the last platonic solid, and it used to be a secret, because if you kept adding surfaces, you'd end up with a sphere, the female. I'm going to tell you why Thoth, before he became Hermes Trismegistus. I'm going to tell you what Thoth told you to follow the curves. Do not follow the angles. I ain't got enough time, but we got to do that for you esoterics, for you metaphysicals out there. I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight. Night, Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Central Standard Time. That is to say, I will see you tomorrow night at 7 Central Standard Time. And guys, just remember, if you're looking on my site, there's a follow button. If you click that button, you'll be able to get a heads up when we're live, when we're broadcasting live. All of our stuff is archived, so you can always pick up this presentation in about an hour from now, and all of our previous presentations are on demand. Find the topic you're interested in, click on it, boom, and you got the show. And also, up there where that follow sign is, guys, that's a share sign. If you know anybody who's interested in these subjects that we're discussing, who could get some benefit from this subject, who can get a benefit from hearing another point of view on these subjects, or people who've asked you some of these questions, or shown some interest, share it. Share it with them. What the hell? If you have a comment on my older sessions, I'll get that comment too, if you missed out. Thank you again for listening in. I want everybody to have a good evening, a good night. Buenas tardes, buenas noches, bono noche. And I'll see you tomorrow, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. I'm going to give you a little music as we go out. Thank you again for listening in to Revolutionary Life. Wow.
Thank you.